Saybrook University places nutrition at the forefront of health through its commitment to developing evidence-based scholar practitioners. With a strong nutrition science curriculum that addresses how body systems function and interact with their environment, applied through a person-centric integrative approach, graduates of the PhD in integrative and functional nutrition are prepared to address the complex array of today's health concerns. Learn more at saybrook.edu. Hey everyone, welcome back to episode 5 of our 50th anniversary season, season 4 of the Saybrook Insights podcast, a proud production of Saybrook University. We're an online, nonprofit, regionally accredited institution of higher learning located here in beautiful Pasadena, California. Today, Carmen and I had a wonderful conversation with Dr. Dennis Ribello, Saybrook alumnus and the author of the new book, Story Like You Mean It. We covered a lot of ground from his time at Saybrook to the inspirational thinking that led to his creating what we believe to be a groundbreaking publication inspiring people the world over to develop the story of who they are with a goal of unlocking their full human potential. Quite humanistic, if I do say so myself. To learn more about Saybrook University, visit us online at saybrook.edu. And now our 5th episode featuring Dr. Dennis Ribello. Thank you. Welcome to another rousing episode of Saybrook Insights. I am so excited to finally get the opportunity with Carmen Bowen, our wonderful co-host, to sit in conversation with the esteemed Saybrook alumnus, Dr. Dennis Ribello. We've asked him to join today to speak about his newest endeavor, a book that's coming out. We'll let him talk all about that. Dennis, welcome to the podcast. Good to have you here, sir. Carmen, take it away.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Long. Hello, Dennis, and welcome to our podcast.
Thank you for the warm invitation.
Thank you. Well, you know, I'm just curious because this is our 50th anniversary for Saybrook, and we're celebrating it the whole year. Mm. And I'm just curious, what brought you to Saybrook?
Yeah, the Genesis question, right?
If you will. Yes, the Genesis question.
Yeah, it's great. Well, I'm a little bit of an explorer, right? And so for me, my sort of love of psychology came from physics originally. So, you know, I actually really enjoyed structure and science. I was a physics kid. I was at the National Youth Science Camp, which is the National Youth Science Foundation's program. I spent weeks at Brookhaven National Lab. And so I was always exploring as a kid. And, you know, I was a BMX rider before the X Games. Things. But, you know, I was looking for a graduate program that had deep roots in psychology, humanistic psychology. I stumbled across phenomenology at Duquesne, but my real love for motivational theory and what I didn't really know was narrative identity. Content and interest was probably fueled a little bit at the University of Rochester. I had Ed Deci, self-determination theory, Ed Deci, Rich Ryan, back in the Rochester, University of Rochester days. So I was running a practice, busy sort of come here and learn storytelling through a system I created. And I kept searching for schools, graduate schools that were allowed for a bit of a residential requirement. I wanted to go somewhere, but I didn't want to be there forever. So I became bi-coastal for a few years. As you know, that's the Saybrook way. And would crash in the Presidio, smell those eucalyptus trees, feel like I was on another planet, look at the ocean and the mountains. And today, now I live in Rhode Island still. And the way I resolve not seeing the mountains is I have a place in the Berkshires too. So I get to see the mountains, although it's a 3-hour drive, and live by the ocean in Rhode Island. So that's my Saybrook story. And, you know, I got hooked, right? Because that's what happens. You know, especially if you're from the Northeast, you start to realize that there's a different way of thinking. I felt a little bit alien in my own skin for years here. Thinking that there would be a more empathetic or humanistic, dialogical, exploratory. And, you know, folks in the Northeast, you probably know this, kind of think about that as, you know, hippie, shake a rattle at it stuff, you know, and that's not really the case, right? I mean, we know that there are three streams of psychology. But if you can honor the human side of the enterprise, as McGregor would say back in the 60s, and you can do it in a systemic way, as we would say, with the human science combining with the systems thinking, you could really be a catalyst in terms of being an agent for learning and change and transformation. And so I searched for something that would smell, taste, feel like that. And the aroma was out in the Bay Area with Saybrook.
With a little bit of eucalyptus on the side there, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me? Come on now.
That's terrific. Dennis, I think you and I didn't quite cross paths. And so it might be helpful. And I know we're here to talk about your book, and we're excited to talk about that. But I think for many Saybrookians and prospective Saybrookians, what is it about the kind of hybrid experience where you're coming together out on the West Coast or wherever it might be as we move into the future? What was it about that experience for you that was really special? Because it sounds like it really brought some great memories up for you, and not just academically, I'm assuming, but probably also personally. Yeah,
absolutely. You know, guys like, you know, Jay Cohn, Jeffrey Thompson, folks like Angela Busila, those are the great humans that enjoy the power of place where I was, which was in, you know, the San Francisco Bay Area at the time. What I really loved about the colleague, it's the people, right? You know, you have these collisions, we call them, you know, some of my colleagues, I think we took this from Amanda Slavin, who helped Tony Hsieh out at Zappos do a lot of transformation. We call them return on collisions, and I'm going to give Amanda credit for that. I think that's rightly attributing her phrase. I had great return on collisions with people there at Saybrook, you know, and being able to disconnect from a place that is your normal home, as we know now, is a really kind of good thing. We've integrated ourselves in work at home today with the pandemic and whatnot, but it was really nice to unplug and really allow myself to reflect and feel liberated, right? The power of place plays into experience, and it was really helpful to take that trip and to, you know, it's like a drive home, right? You know, today we don't drive home, we walk in the field behind our house where we find a place to reset, a room, a corner in the house. But I think it was physically so distant for me, right? Across the country, couldn't really be much more distant, that it allowed me to set myself up for absorption, right, of material content relationships. And I could stay connected afterwards, which is pretty powerful too, right?
Yeah, it's those relationships that, you know, as we've heard over and over again, you know, with Saybrookians, it's that the bondedness that comes, you know, and I don't know that I ever had that, you know, with graduate school. You know, we went, we did our thing, and then we left, and we got done as quickly as we could and out the door, you know, so that we could move on. And yet there was something, what I love about Saybrook is the bondedness, the real connectivity between individuals that seems to emerge. So it sounds like you had that experience and then some.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was pretty liberating. And it was, you know, when you'd simmer on those memories, when you would disconnect, right? You leave the Saybrook experience, and then it's the experience itself stretches out. Because you reflect on it post the moment, and then you're able to kind of understand it within the context of being at home. Yeah. So unplugging, plugging back in, and then having that simmer time, I think is really important.
That's a great way to put it. Simmer time. I love it. Yeah,
I can easily see that, because as I learn my way around Saybrook and meet as many Saybrookians as I possibly can, I see that, and we're trying to even further that connectivity to keep it going, because you guys have so much to share, and the experiences that you gained here and then beyond, we want to remind people, you know, what we're all about, and then usher in new people. Mm-hmm. So certainly that is one of the things we're aiming to do this year with that 50th anniversary. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, you bet. My pleasure.
So Dennis, you've been simmering for a while on this major project, so we'll use your descriptor there. And I was so excited when I turned on Facebook, what was it, about 3 or 4 weeks ago. It's this beautiful in your face cover. It's so awesome. I love the look of it. It's great. There it is. Yeah.
Just in fact, these just came in from the publisher These are the author pre-releases, came in within the last 24 hours. I have five boxes around me.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Story like you mean it, from Dr. Dennis Rabello. So Dennis, tell us what led to this. Like you've been working on this, I think, probably for some time. I know this has been part of your life's work. So would love to hear the genesis story of your book and kind of what led to the current moment.
Yeah. So, you know, there are always these sort of moments, these pivotal moments where you kind of commit, right? And, you know, sometimes we hedge bets, or at least I did, right? You know, how much time am I going to put into something? When am I going to do it? What's the utility of it? What's the warmth of doing the thing? What's the struggle,
yeah,
right, to do the thing? And maybe the struggle is really fun because of what you're creating. Now, those are all general sort of answers to your question in particular, Nathan, Dr. Long, is that's like, you know, why would I do this, right? I mean, think about it. I wrote a dissertation. It was a couple of hundred pages. It wasn't like, you know, a 90 pager, you know. The literature review covered personal identity, narrative rhetoric, social identity, right? Sort of anything that you can imagine that would mitigate like career, work, transition, organizational storytelling, right? All of this, because what I was spending time with was understanding what I was seeing in my life before I wrote the book. I saw people who had talent, and I knew that they had talent because after I would spend time with them, I would see, and you've experienced this, both of you, right? Carmen, you know, and Nathan, you've seen this or heard this come from people's mouths, from their hearts. Here's who I am. Here's what's going on. And they'd share an experience. But I would see people who I knew had more experiences that were rich and were meaningful, not be able to usher them into conversation, string them together to be like connect the dots in a way that would be really meaningful, that would tell their story over time, okay? That would showcase competencies, motivations, and start to characterize their personal identity within a workplace setting. So we're in this interconnected, hyper-connected world. There's a lot of complexity. There's a lot, as we know now, right? Post-COVID, during COVID, et cetera, extended COVID. How it's even more interesting to see how people are mitigating and answering the question, tell me about yourself. So whether it were a leader, a student, an English language learner who came from Cambodia, landed in South Providence, a class at the university, maybe it's a female lieutenant in a New England police force, and she's in a public speaking class and she has to explain who she is. I saw the struggle, and I had spent much of my time from the standpoint of earning money, right? As a person who knew things, building curriculum that would, in programs that would help people tell their stories during key moments. And that was great. That was pre Saybrook, and then post Saybrook, I was using my knowledge of narrative identity and positive psychology, humanistic psychology and linguistics and rhetoric to help companies establish programming through corporate universities. So that was fun. And as I'm witnessing, I think it was this spring, and I was struggling with when am I going to write this thing, right? I knew I was going to write it, but where would the focus be? How could I democratize what I was doing, right, with executive performance coaching and career transition work, because it's expensive, right? I mean,
yeah.
if you want a good transition coach or leadership coach, it's going to cost you some dough. And I thought to myself, why not get to people earlier, right? So, you know, like last year, you know, COVID hits. I was in Sennheiser, the audio company. I was in the Bay Area at their experience center, doing a teaching to their leadership team there, story pathing, mm-hmm. how to plan your peak story so that you could align yourself to be more engaged as a leader, this German company in San Francisco. So I contemplated, do I go? Because February 17th, 18th, you know, we're thinking about a cruise ship that lands in San Francisco. A bunch of people leave the cruise ship and start to spread COVID all over San Francisco. Yeah. Right. I started feeling sick when I arrived and I stayed at a hotel, the Phoenix, which is, you know, Chip Conley's original hotel.
That's right.
Yeah. Right. You know, Chip from Emotional Equations and yeah. Wisdom Work. And actually he's endorsed the book, you know, so all of these collisions are coming together for me too. And are even as I look back, So I'm thinking about all of this. Finally get home, have a massive sinus infection. Thought maybe I had COVID into March, but I was fine. And speaking to family, still a little cold. And I said, you know, I got to dig in. People have all of this self-reflective time. I've got to take 10 years of research, models, and I have to distill it now. I have to get it done now. And I did. I took, and this in large part came from my dissertation work. It came from my third essay, the Peak Storytelling essay. And it came from my even qualifying research that I did in Gary Metcalf's course way back when. And it connected to when I presented at the first international conference, the International Human Science Research Conference, which really was founded heavily impressioned by Amadeo Giorgi, who was my phenomenology teacher and really a rock star in the space.
Oh my gosh, you got to study with Amadeo in the flesh, so to speak. Yeah.
I pushed myself into his seminars.
Oh, that's good.
And I corrected one of his interpretations, and he said, you know, I think you could be right there. In retrospect, I said, well, this is kind of a bold move. You know, I don't know if he's ever going to sit with me in his Newfoundlands again at this conference, but, I invited a different, alternative way to think about the what's called the transformation of the meaning unit, in which is part of like his method called the descriptive phenomenological method. So what I did was I democratized, how can you get phenomenology, how can you get narrative identity to be something that people discern so they can answer the question, tell me about yourself. And you know this, Nathan, you're at a conference with other presidents, you're returning to a board meeting. Carmen, you're speaking to somebody just before we even started recording and you gave me a version of who you are. It's not the whole version. You probably have a whole lot more, but we're asked this question either overtly, right? Someone voices it and says, tell me about yourself, or it's quietly presumed that you're going to do that self-introduction. Mm-hmm. So in particular, I was really tuned into the fact that people are failing all over the place at this. I need to help fix it. And so all these populations, all of this chaos, all of this freeze time, I said, let's go. And the manuscript was done and approved and locked December 18th, with the release obviously being March 16th, which we're all very excited about.
And we're going to make it happen on our end as much as we can. That's terrific. First of all, I will say I haven't had a chance to really dig deep into your book yet. And I'm excited to do that. By the way, it is super easy to buy an advanced copy or version of it for Kindle. I was able to do that. Do you have an audiobook available yet? Or will it be available?
I'm going to be doing the Audible version. And I have to say, you are an explorer yourself. Most people don't do the pre-order. And I would say, hold off until March 16th, folks, even though only because my publisher tells me that. But if you're a president of the university and you can't be stopped like Nathan, like Dr. Long, go ahead and do the pre-order. I'm not going to stop you, you know? But yeah, it's back to you, Nathan. Let me give them.
No, it's great. I figured I probably ought to return some of that tuition money back into your pocket, you know, on my end. So yeah, no, right on.
I'm not gonna do that. what I'm gonna say is, Dennis, I will text you my email, and I want a signed copy. I like my VIP treatment, you know. I want to tell you, Dennis, when you said, when you meet people and you say, tell me about yourself, that is a terrifying
thing. Yes. Carmen, to your point, like I was reading that introduction. I haven't gotten really into the book, and your question is, well, not your question, but your comment is kind of spot on. Like I started reading that intro and I started sweating profusely, like thinking, oh my God, is he going to ask me that during the podcast? Like, tell me about yourself. And then I'm thinking, what would I say? And then of course, and you're so, it kind of hits the nail on the head. We all struggle with that, you know, just to come up with that personal narrative. So anyway, I didn't mean to jump on your question, Carmen, but yeah, it just got me sweating.
Yeah, that always meant, you know, because I doing that job for Saybrook being university relations, people ask me that all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you have a book, and I cannot wait to get my signed copy so that I can.
I wrote it down.
You wrote it down, right?
Dennis, did you hear that? She needs a signed copy. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, I think it's. I love my signed copies,
but no, honestly, I can't. In all seriousness, a way to really go through it and seriously go through it, because in my job, I am asked that every day. And you ask more than ever because you're on these Zoom calls all day. Mm-hmm. And I still can't perfect it, because when someone asks you that and you really haven't rehearsed it, then you're like, okay, what am I gonna say today? Or if you've met these people before, what can I say differently than I said before?
Yeah. Yeah. So here's what's really interesting about that. So that's, let me tell you why that happens. So one of the things that happens when you meet someone, and what I learned through my research, is that you, and tell me if I'm right here, you can snap, yell, scream, say positive things, or just laugh like crazy. Okay, Carmen. But it sounds something like this. I'm going to go speak to somebody. I look at them and I go, oh my gosh, Nathan. Okay. Nathan is with Dr. Long, Dr. Long's president. And I think that he might want to see me. Hi, Dr. Long, how are you? Good to see you. Yeah, oh yeah, I've always loved education, because he's in education, so I should probably say that. And the West Coast, oh yeah, so you're down in more southern, yeah. Well, I have some cousins out there, and none of this, by the way, pertains to who you are. It's the oddest thing in the world, right? And so we tend to stumble. Why we stumble, and my research supports that we look for lived experiences that we think might be relevant, prevalent, sense-making to the person that they might be interested in, because we want to be interested or showing that we're interesting to the interested party. We want to be show our interest in them. You know, it's an interest thing. There's some mutuality, right? And the word dialogue, right? We try to be dialogical about it, but we can't really do that. And dia means, dialogos means to pass through your mouth with meaning. Well, none of this is meaningful. So it's not a dialogue. And people are funny. They even report that it's a dialogue, but it's not. So here's what happens. You think of all these things in your head, you'd start dumping them out. Then you start to, after you do the rake, you feel the pressure, you have an unclear start, rough unfolding. Think of it as a loop going from 12 o'clock to 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock, like a clock to 9 o'clock. Then you realize there are time constraints and you feel like, well, I'm going to shut it down. And then as you shut it down, you're motivated to reconnect with the person. The problem is it's about 17 more times that you need to have episodic exchanges with the person in order to fill in the gaps of who you are. Oh, by the way, that's presuming that you actually have reflective time and a process to discern who you are within this relationship. So the problem is that we don't teach this, right? So we live in a world where we're consuming, absorbing, thinking, but not really using the storytelling muscle. We are doing self-reflection, but without a process, and we're not looking at our lived experiences, right? And we're not thinking how our lived experiences connected to our identity over time. So it's a temporal thing, right? I had the past chapter of my life, let's say 0 to 13, now from whatever time to whatever time, maybe it's 0 to 20, 0 to 22, 22 to 42 to 52, and then it's tomorrow or this next 5 minutes onward. So you have past, now, future, but how do you organize your life moments? So the book actually goes through and shows you how to find 9 dots. Think of Maslow's hierarchy, okay? So Maslow had a hierarchy, right? It's way predates, you know, SDT theory for human motivation. And it's this, that you need food and water. That's what you're motivated to get, right? Physiological needs. Then, you know, presumably you'll get shelter. And then after you get some shelter, you're going to probably belong, hopefully. And if you've been in middle school, you know what it's like not to belong, right? Remember those days, right? What group? Yeah. Are you? Oh, yeah. Group, whatever, right? But you don't worry about self-esteem and self-confidence until you get all these other things met. So essentially, it's only then that you ascend to what, right? Self-actualization, helping other people feel good. So if our calling is, as human beings, if you believe in this presumption that we're designed to live some sort of purpose, that we should probably discern through our life moments, which I call blue dots in the book. These are formative experiences. This is connected to Jansen's research on leadership formative experiences. If we can discern lived experiences, right? If we can understand them. By the way, now how do we understand them? So I had to create something called the story stamp, and it allowed you to not only identify these 9 dots, but also to be able to stamp them and unpack competencies, mental muscles, motivations, power of people, and power of place. And then associate a symbol with it. So at the end, you get 3 symbols. Wait, Doc, what's up? You said 3 symbols. Mm-hmm. 3 symbols. Here's why. Because we have something called a peak storytelling map. And it's just like Maslow's hierarchy, but it has 3 levels, it has 4 lanes. So think about the base of it, our hero experiences, because what I also realized through my practice and research combined, that the whenever somebody told a story that was heroic, not I'm going to go save someone heroic, that I faced an obstacle and I was heroic in my own life. So this is just about self. I land on the planet like an alien. I need to figure myself out. I have to stand up to a bully, overcome an injury, survive a divorce, right? Whatever that is. So I had to find courage to do something, adapt, find my voice, speak up, right? Maybe turn my communication down, right? And my leadership off and hide, be adaptable. Who knows? Be analytical. So once you look at three of those dots, and then you look at three dots in the middle of the diagram, so still on a triangle format, listeners, the middle of the diagram is about belonging. But in this case, for us, it's about not just belonging, you belong. It's about being a collaborative moment. So I looked at Maslow's hierarchy and I changed the way you can orient yourself to it. And then I added the search for dots in it. So The middle of the diagram is about collaborative experiences. So you have hero on the bottom, second rung, which is the middle, collaborative. It's I created something with the help of other or others. So team project, school project, team output, marriage, family, business, enterprise, nonprofit event, CBO type initiative. And when you truly create with others, because we're social beings, that's a social layer. The next layer was virtuous. Virtuous is about after you light the fuse to thinking this way, you start thinking, well, what was the thing that I really loved? And virtuous is that story that where you find your super self, right? This is the iteration of yourself where you say, this blue dot was so important, was so formative on me that I love this. I love teaching. I love caregiving. I love being an advocate for cancer survivors. I was just this morning with folks, Chris Draft, a former NFL guy turned nonprofit leader from, you know, he's lost his wife in his first year of marriage to lung cancer. She was never a smoker. He's a Stanford grad, played football and baseball for Stanford, NFL guy for 10 plus years, I think 12 total, landed in Georgia, great guy, friends with Bernice King, does a lot of work in advocacy. Lung cancer can kill non-smokers. Mm-hmm. 20-ish percent, sometimes 25%, depending on the year. This is unbelievable.
Yeah.
So when you start to think about his story was about finding that he loves teaching people how to reframe, whether it's about, you know, race, America, you know, in America, value, power, whatever it might be, or lung cancer can hurt people who are non-smokers, right? So just unbelievable. But once you find the thing that you like, whether it's caregive, advocate, teach, lead, transform, and you can, and it might not be a fully formed blue dot, right? On the top of the pyramid, it might just be you catch a whiff of it. You're like, I really like that, but then things change. Like I love teaching, but it was always in corporations where there was also all of this negative energy, manipulation and whatnot. I'm a professor at Roger Williams University, technology, leadership and management. I'm also the vice president of the faculty senate over university relations. You know, great stuff. I love it. Great appointment. I really appreciate it, right? That's very different than the corporate world. And I also have a practice that's super active every day, like wildly active, meeting with groups, individuals, all through the weekend, every single week. And I love that. But I was able to manufacture, right, or craft my future blue dot by using the system in my own life. And I help other people do the same. And this, in some cases, we've had students, Hannah Ong, a Cambodian American student who went and told her story. This is great. This is funny. Hannah came up to me after class at Roger Williams University and said, hey, Doc, I told my story. Now, this is a female wrestler from Cambodia living in the United States. Great, great thinker. Very strong. Thought the class was going to be a lot easier. Learned the peak storytelling methodology through a public speaking class. So that's how we delivered it. Hmm. I have a digital tool so that folks could like go through and assemble their story. This is before the book, predates the book. So she's, yeah, I got the scholarship. I said, you got a scholarship? Let's share it with the class. She said, yeah, it was like $20,000. I said, whoa, $20,000. Hey, folks, you know, it's like Hannah got to tell her story and got a scholarship for $20,000. She said, they said it's unrestricted. I said, Hannah, you can use that at any school. She said, yeah, for all 4 years, they said that. I said, Hannah, that's $80,000. You know, so your story can liberate you, right? Yeah. Your story can liberate you, whether you're, you know, a police lieutenant. We teach this also. I taught slices of this in prison. It was the first career readiness program to help individuals at Rhode Island ACI. Now the student who I taught, Justin Thomas, now teaches others. James Montero, who's the executive director of the Reentry Campus Program, which, you know, in his own right, raised a lot of money for his nonprofit. He also received funding from John Legend for, you know, some ancillary funding the last couple of years. He is phenomenal. We have, the first week, we had 70 people register through my nonprofit that I founded with a few others, but I was the primary founder of that, and I'm still the executive director of that. Clearly, I don't have a lot of time on my hands for free things other than doing this part.
I was going to say, where do you find the time? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I fill it, right? Because this is my calling. This is my aspirational becoming. And so James Montero has 70 people in the first class already for one weekend. It doesn't start until April 1st. So this is a class that's based, that uses this book and then exercises. And it's a correspondence class because folks are in prison. They're not allowed technology. We'll probably have over 100 people enrolled in that class. It's also a class that it's in the process of getting college credit confirmed from one college, but it's already has three credits associated with it from Roger Williams University. So students going through this in prison will come out with college credits. It's just phenomenal. And it's the gateway program to all of the programs. And he's going to launch this on a national basis, so that we'll probably touch 1,600 people in Rhode Island over time over the next couple of years, and then nationally he'll roll this out. Wow. So, you know, this knows no bounds. So when I say democratize it, I mean break down all of the different areas of life where you know, you think that only leaders can tell the story. Well, I have news for everybody. The flip is in. My friend, Dr. Wanda Hedding Grant, who is now the vice provost at Carnegie Mellon, I was speaking to her and she, you know, said some pretty sweet things on the website about the book. That, you know, you got to start the story. And actually, the president of Cleveland Clinic South Point, Margaret McKenzie, was saying to me in a chat we had a similar type of thing, which is you can't get to diversity, equity, and inclusion without people in the room understanding their own narrative.
Mm-hmm.
No, right? So, how can you teach me how to be less whatever or more whatever unless I honor whatever?
My own background. That's right. We just came out of a university-wide series training last week, I believe, Carmen. Is that right? With Tracy J and the 100 Voices movement.
Yes.
That is part of her MO, right? In terms of you gotta know yourself and talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah. And the way we normally do that is say you gotta know yourself and then we leave it.
Yeah.
Well, like this takes like some time. Like you know, this book isn't a giant book. The book is, you know, with references, it's, you know, 232 pages. Kick the references out and go to the last page and it's probably 212-ish. And so, but it's not the reading that's the work, it's the reading and the stop and do the exercise.
Yeah.
And then, but hey, you know what's really amazing about this? Carmen, it is your own work. It is what I call your me search. It's the best kind of research. So when that. You know, like when people say
me search, I'm stealing that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's great work, but it's okay. No, you know, it because, and I kid around. I say, well, the reason why people love my class is because it's about them.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and we just don't get that time. And it is the structure and the process that allows any student at any stage and age in their life to explore the lived experiences. And then it's a philosophy for living afterwards, because you can take the model, peak storytelling model, and you can look at, because you're going to collect more experiences. Some of them are going to be blue dots, significant. Some will be, you know, light blue, some will be orange, red, green, whatever, but they're not blue. And that's okay. And your narrative, because you now can look at these 9 dots and narrow it down to 3, one from each level, you can create a peak story. So a peak story is when you have a hero dot, a collaborative, and a virtuous. And by the way, if you've watched Stephen Jay in his Stanford speech, Stephen Jobs, he obviously thought he was going to die and then examined his life deeply. He actually follows the model. Exactly. I mean, I started to cry when my wife said, Shannon said, you know, what's wrong with you? I said, I'm so happy I'm crying, because he followed the model. And so the best narrative, of course, I would have advised him a little bit different on the performance part, but he did a wonderful job, right? Yeah. And it's part of the book is looking at that model And after I teach the model through the book and after people use the different tools. So there are a few different graphs or tools that help people organize. And so really I become an organizer of so many stories. And that's why we decided to do a coaching certification program to help reach more individuals, right? And I can't do it alone anymore. It's nice having the digital tool. It's really nice having the book. And we're really looking to help these populations of where there are, like, you know, you're going to leave because narrative identity is more prevalent and you're more conscious of it when you're going to shift. So if you know you're going to college or career or you're going to work, you're more aware of it. Now, in the guidance counsel world, it's a 411 kids to one guidance counselor in the United States. There's no way they can have deep conversations. So one of the initiatives we're doing is really supporting the heck out of the Berkshire school system in Berkshire is called North Adams Public Schools. Okay. And Bob Malkus and, I would say Kimberly Roberts Mirandi, Dr. Joshua Mendel from Massachusetts College of Liberal Arts. We had Shane Steinman, and then we had one of their lead guidance counselors go through. I don't know if she's technically head of guidance, Jamie Hamilton, go through the program. They have the story pathing program. They teach the class in the high school. Wow. Which is just unbelievable. So we're in high schools, we're in prisons, we're in bridge programs. We did a Dunamis bridge program for moms who had kids who were going back to school. And these are narrative transition points. We do major retreats that for leaders and mid-career folks in finance, CFOs. I did a conference for CFOs. I mean, it's unbelievable. Because it's what Saybrook says. It's the humanistic side. How can it be that you're not, you're incapable at 16 or 18 to explore your own life? Sure, you might not have as many lived experiences, but if you have the tools, could you dive into your own life and create, right? And manufacture, co-craft, fashion a story to be contextualized and fed into different environments so you're more alive. Warren Bennis, one of the founders of Saybrook, said this in his book, Becoming a Leader. Becoming a leader is synonymous with becoming yourself. It's that simple, yet also that difficult, right? Yep. But without a process, you can't self-lead, and you certainly can't do it through rhetoric, through spoken word. And that's the life that we live, that's how I'm connecting the dots for you here. I hope it's starting to really make sense.
It's awesome. I was, go ahead, Garmin.
This is really great. And, Dennis, you made a reference. You said you got to know yourself, but then most people stop, they just keep going after that. But I can't wait to see how you really delve into that, because part of knowing yourself, you have to own it, good or bad. Mm-hmm. And then you can put that story together, sounds like. And this is just quite interesting and profound to hear this, because so many of us struggle with telling that story or make that story path, if you will.
Yeah.
And gosh, this is good stuff.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the things too, to build off what Carmen was just saying too, is that what struck me is the connection to the humanistic ethos that we have here at Saybrook. It's not just storytelling for storytelling's sake or the narrative process for the narrative process sake. There, you said it. These are your words. It's storytelling for self-liberation, which I thought was really profound, which really kind of, for me, captured the so what question, right? Like, so what? And the stories you've been telling along the way here today about, from the prison work that's being done to the work in the K-12 schools, it sounds really like you're getting at the nub of that self-liberation piece. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's wonderfully captured by you too. You're not only a good leader, you're a great student. You catch up.
Oh, hey.
great student. Yeah, no, it absolutely is, because, it's funny. I was leaving a narrative retreat that I did years ago in the Berkshires. We're coming off the Mohawk Trail, which coming out of a river where we're all just standing in the water, just absorbing, the energy of nature. And it was a weird thing for me to be doing with Northeastern people, right? Because they're like, what are you doing here? I'm like, we're pulling off the side of the road. We came back from ziplining. We're going to go back to the lodge. Everything's Nothing, the tire didn't blow out and you didn't miss anything. And I asked the folks in the truck van thing that we were in, I said, how did you feel? And they said, they struggled a little bit, but they said free. Eventually everybody basically said free. Oh, wow. They felt freedom. And I said, when have you felt that way when you've spoken about yourself? To your point.
Yeah.
And, this is really, as I said earlier, Dennis, good stuff. I cannot wait. So Dennis, going forward, and this is such an honor to meet someone that is walking the talk through your work post Saybrook. And we're getting ready to roll out several things that I know I will see you participate in. See, again, there's that assumptive, right?
It's strong. I will heal to your power. I feel like my Australian Shepherd. I'm going to like just put my head down a little bit and say, yep.
She has that effect on all of us. Right. Seriously, yeah.
Right, but we have some good stuff coming up. I mentioned, offline, we were talking about, you featuring this in our Saybrook's Insight. But also, we're going to be hosting May 5th through 7th, a mind-body wellness fair, which we're going to have a variety of authors. We're going to have people, demonstrating, discussing, different mental health, wellness, we tried to keep it broad because we didn't want to box it where it would only have, host just a few people. And I think your book would be amazing, especially for those of us that would really benefit or grow with that. But one of our big events we're going to have, so I know you're going to participate in this. We're hosting our first annual film, book, and poetry festival. And it will be virtual this year, but going forward, we're looking at it being a hybrid because everybody's everywhere in the world. So I will be sending you information personally because I cannot wait to shout, we were talking earlier offline about the mountains. I'm gonna go up on the mountains and talk about this book.
Get up on that mountain. I have a friend who will also really enjoy, a colleague who will enjoy the poetry part of the invitation. I have a few friends, but one of them is Marshall Davis Jones, who I, at the beginning of chapter one, The Case for Storytelling in the book, I pull a bit from his poetry slam back in the day, which was really almost like it was Nostradamus about technology. So one part of it, he said, from the Garden of Eden to the branches of Macintosh, apple picking has always come at a great cost. iPad, iMac, iPhone, iChat. I can do all these things without making eye contact.
Oh, wow.
Oh my God.
We used to sprint to pick blackberries. Now we dash to the Sprint store to pick. Yeah, right, you got it, right? So there's a lot, like he's really good and I'll bring him into the loop and he has new stuff and he's a wonderful, wonderful voice. And I think what you're doing here, curating these connections that are with Saybrook folks, but also the folks that are from their pods and places too, right?
Yes.
Bring them into the fold and into the flow, get them to feel the ethers, and the energy that we can bring to life, right? Yeah. To our lives now, right? It's the only one we know to be true.
Right.
So it's powerful. It's powerful work you're doing, Carmen. And I say that not only because you have a great healing voice, and I mean that as a double entendre, of course.
Thank you. I'm a famous radio DJ. Okay, well, I'm not, but still.
yeah.
So thank you for saying that. Yeah. But no, this has been quite a treat, and we hope to see you at our different events, but also the work you're doing is going to help not only people like me, because that was a terrifying question that I get asked every day. So I cannot wait to delve into this, but also to, continue the conversation with you at different, events or workshops so that I can be better. Because you can read stuff, but sometimes just kind of talking with everybody to ask questions and what did you get from this or how did you interpret this. So I see that this is not only just a read, but a continuation of learning. But, you know, but certainly the work that you did pre and during and post Saybrook is, I see that humanistic feel in it, and that is what we're all about. So this is going to be something that we're certainly happy to share, but we're proud of, because that's what Saybrook is all about. So,
indeed. Yes, well said, Carmen. Great. Well said. Yeah, thank you. Dennis Ribello, story like you mean it. Dennis, you want to give us a website where folks can go to do all the ordering and all that good stuff?
Absolutely. So you can check it out. It'll be released March 16th on Amazon. Also thereafter, Barnes and Nobles, etc. And but you can check it out at Dr. Dr. Dennis, D-E-N-N-I-S, Ribello. That's Rebel with an O.com. So Dr. Dennis Ribello.com. And hey, Carmen, to your point, this book is like at the end of each chapter, you've got to do something. So again, remember, right? Like, you just set the time aside. And when I send you the book with that note, your commitment's got to be that you got to commit to sell first.
That's right. Okay? And you can write me little notes and things like that. I think I'll chuckle. You know, you can tell from my demeanor. So you can write me stuff and I'll know what you mean, right? And you know I'll be laughing. And if you see me send you an email saying LOL chapter whatever, right?
Well, how did you know I was already making notes on certain parts of the book? I had to pull one out of underneath my desk here out of one of these crates, boxes, you know? I'm like, this is going to be Carmen's right here. Crazy stuff. Let's go to page 147, philosophy for beyond an engaged life.
Oh, there you go.
Uh-oh. You hear that, Dr. Long? I'm ready, though.
Hey, I'm already doing the work. I'm on it. I'm on it. Yeah. Well, hey, thank you again, Dennis. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. Last thing I just want to say, Nathan, Dr. Long, and also Carmen, is this, like, look at what service can we do but to give tools to the world so that we can get to them to be engaging in this kind of self-discovery that is immediately convertible, right? Mm-hmm. So if you know people who are in these places of transition, that are either traditional, ritualistically transitional places, college to high school to job, or that they're doing mid-career shifts, or they're thinking about school. You know, there's a reason why it takes a lot of years to finish school, because people have a suspicion that they're going to school for the right reason, but then they switch and delay. And so my hope is that the book does get into the hands and gets referred really through institutions and centers, right? So that we help people get through their journey with more engagement and richness so that they can go do the work they're meant to do. So I just wanted to kind of add that, because our stories do survive us.
That's right.
Absolutely. That's a good place to end it, huh?
Yeah, that's the punctuation mark, people. That's it. We're out. Drop the mic. Let's go.
Thank you.